Welcome to Words, Words, Words. This is your host, Robert Tinajero. On today's episode, I'll be talking about some of the rhetoric being used in the Black Lives Matters protest. At this point, I am sure all of my listeners have seen that horrific video of George Floyd being killed by a police officer in Minneapolis. And all of the protesting that has spread across the country and even across the globe because of that video and the reaction to it. And so on this episode, it's not really going to be a debate or discussion about different issues. This podcast looks at rhetoric and discourse and word choice. And so I want to talk about the little of the rhetoric that is connected to this whole topic. And so the first piece of rhetoric or word choice that I want to talk about is the phrase and the movement Black Lives Matters, as opposed to the phrasing All Lives Matter. Now, so I think at this point, most people understand the difference between the two and how people protesting police brutality against blacks are part of this movement and use this term Black Lives Matter. But sort of as a counter protest to that, I guess you could call it, some people prefer to say, well, no, all lives matter. And what's interesting about what's going on here rhetorically is that somebody might say, well, yes, obviously all lives matter, so what's wrong with somebody that wants to use that term? The problem is for people that agree with the Black Lives Matter movement is that you are trying to diminish what the movement is about when you are not allowing people to focus on the message of police brutality specifically against black people. And so when somebody says Black Lives Matter, they're trying to stress that specific police brutality that is happening against that specific group of people. And somebody could argue that obviously police brutality happens against people of all colors and races and ethnicities. But clearly, as we've seen throughout history and as we've seen in video recordings over the last, I mean, it's much longer than just the last 5 years, but just in the last five years, we've had numerous cases where wrongful police brutality is happening against blacks. And so that's how the movement was born. And so I think the best analogy that I've heard is that when somebody says Black Lives Matter and somebody responds to that, no, all lives matter, it's kind of like somebody that is fighting for research for, let's say, for breast cancer. And so they're out there saying, we need to fight against breast cancer. It's killing people. We need to put more funding into it, more energy and resource into it. And then somebody comes along and says, well, no, all cancers matter. And so you can't argue that all cancers aren't important and not all cancers matter. But in that situation, somebody's trying to point out that to them at the moment, they're wanting to talk about specifically one kind of cancer that maybe has affected them or their lives. And so that is the analogy that I like to use when explaining the difference between somebody saying Black Lives Matter or All Lives Matter. And then obviously there's Blue Lives Matter as well, people that want to emphasize defending police officers. And so it's all really interesting rhetorically how people use those terms, when they use them, why they use them. And so you can think about yourself, what term you use. If you have recently felt the urge to put Black Lives Matter on your social media posts or hashtag Black Lives Matter, or if you or others you know want to keep stressing the All Lives Matter or Blue Lives Matter, or some people put all three. And so rhetorically, it's really interesting what's going on there and the meaning that those terms have on different levels. So I want to shift gears a little bit here and talk about the protests that have been going on across the country. And specifically, I want to talk about the protests that were going on in D.C. and a term that was used by the Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, on a phone call with governors after these protests kept growing and growing in D.C. He urged the governors to, quote unquote, dominate the battle space when dealing with the nationwide protests. And so a lot of people were bothered by that phrasing, battle space, right? And so in some ways, it's not that surprising that you get somebody from the military, the Secretary of Defense, that uses this phrase, battle space, because that is the terminology they're used to. And he even said, we're used to using that phrasing on a regular basis. So it's kind of understandable, but then it's also to others very shocking that he would choose that wording when talking about using soldiers, using the military against American citizens and talking about this protesting space as a battle space. And what's interesting is I guess he thought it was bad wording, or because of a response to it or pressure against what he said. Later on, he did say, quote unquote, in retrospect, I would use different wording so as not to distract from the more important matters at hand or allow some to suggest that we are militarizing the issue. And so using the term battle space clearly is militarizing the issue. Many would argue that the fact that you're sending in military is the actual literal militarizing of the situation. But it's interesting that just that one phrase, battle space, was used by the Secretary of Defense, and then people kind of within the protest protested against him using that language and that imagery to talk about the protesting space. And then he felt that he had to apologize about it. And so you can think about how you feel about him using that term battle space. There are some that agree with him and say he shouldn't have apologized because that's what it is, that the protesters should be dealt with and dominated harshly by the police and military. And there are a lot, I would say more people that are bothered by that that term and that mentality of viewing the protesting space as a battle space. So the next piece of rhetoric I want to talk about is the pretty astonishing visual rhetoric of the president clearing protesters from outside St. John's Episcopal Church, which is right next to the White House, clearing them out, and then having the photo op where he's clearly thinking about the visual rhetoric of him clearing out the space, walking surrounded by police, and then standing in front of a church, St. John's Episcopal, and holding up the Bible. So all of that is dripping with these super powerful, interesting, whatever you want to call them, pieces of visual rhetoric. And clearly the president knew what he was doing. I did a little bit of research on this, and there are some people, especially some, and not all, but some even evangelicals that love what he did. They love the imagery of him taking control and him being a symbol of like fighting evil and lifting up the Bible in front of the church. But there are many, I would say, in the research I've done, many, many more people that were either extremely bothered by what he did. And remember, I'm not going to get into the debate here about, you know, how he moved out the protesters to get this photo op. In this podcast, I want to talk about the rhetoric, right? And so the visual rhetoric, a lot of people were extremely bothered by this president specifically in this moment going and standing in front of a church that he didn't even ask the pastor of the church for permission to do this or tell him that it was going to happen, and then to stand there holding the Bible for this photo op. That that visual rhetoric really upset a lot of people, and to a lot of people reeked of hypocrisy coming from this president that has had a lot of various issues. And so, as always, I want my listeners to think about how they feel about this visual rhetoric of the president standing in front of this church where he had just cleared protesters and holding a Bible. And so think about like what meaning that has to you or to those you know, or if you discuss this with your friends or family members or coworkers, whoever it is, what meaning that has to them, because it might be different from the meaning that it has to you, and then how you feel about the president setting up this photo op, this visual rhetoric, and the message that he was trying to send with that, and how you feel about that. So the last thing I want to talk about here has to do with rhetoric being used and how it's connected to social media. Specifically, the president last week put out a tweet that included the phrasing when the looting starts, the shooting starts. And so if you want to, you can go back and look up the origins of that phrasing, which the president claims he didn't know, which was used in the segregated South, I believe was first used in the 60s. But what's interesting about him using that terminology and putting it on Twitter is that Twitter, for the first time in his presidency, hid his tweet and put a fact-checking notice on it. They actually did that for another tweet, but they also did it for this one because they felt that it was, this one wasn't the fact-checking, this one was because they thought the tweet was inciting violence. And part of their policy is to now not allow tweets that do that. And so if you want to go look up on Google, you can see the two or three tweets that Twitter either hid or put this fact-checking label on. And the president was very upset about that. What's interesting is that the president put the same message or similar message on Facebook. And Facebook, and specifically Mark Zuckerberg, said that he didn't feel it was up to him to take down that same message that was hidden on Twitter about the looting and shooting. And a lot of people were upset about that, including some higher-ups in Facebook that decided either to talk against that, or I think in one or two cases, they decided to quit their jobs at Facebook. And so something that I want you to think about is, if you want to go look up that specific tweet that has this phrasing about when the looting starts, the shooting starts, or I'm paraphrasing there, if you think that Twitter was in the right in hiding it, and also in fact-checking some of the president's tweets, or if you agree more with Facebook and saying, no, in this case, we're going to leave that message up because we don't feel like that has gotten to a level where, you know, it needs to be taken down or modified or changed in any way. And then the last thing I want to talk about also has to do with Donald Trump, and this has to do on Snapchat. So Snapchat decided that they were going to stop promoting the president's content in their discovery platform. So they did not cut off, you know, the president or his campaign's Snapchat account. But what they did do is they stopped spotlighting his snaps in the discover feature in Snapchat. And so his account had been regularly spotlighted in the Discover feature, which also highlights content from like celebrities or news organizations. But a spokesperson for Snap said, "We are not currently promoting the president's content on Snapchat's Discover platform. We will not amplify voices who incite racial violence and injustice by giving them free promotion on Discover." And so that's really interesting. And then that person added, this is Rachel Rakusin, the spokesperson for Snap, added, racial violence and injustice have no place in our society, and we stand together with all who seek peace, love, equality, and justice in America. So it's really interesting that Snap took this stance to stop promoting the president's snaps in their Discover feature. And so once again, like I've said with the other topics on this episode, I want you to think about how you feel about that, about Snap taking this stand with the president's messages. And if you think that social media sites should stay out of the business of trying to kind of regulate or censor certain types of material, and if the president's messages kind of cross the line to where they should, or maybe you think, well, yes, they should, no, they shouldn't. All of this, for me, for somebody that studies rhetoric in all sorts of different places, beyond the very serious issue of police brutality and protests, I try to look at these examples of how rhetoric is used, whether it's specific words or terminology or access to people's messages on social media, or if it's the visual rhetoric. All of that stuff is what this podcast is about. And so I hope you liked the topics that I chose for today's episode. I hope they get you thinking. I hope they get you talking with people you know to talk about how you feel about these issues. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Remember, you can always access the podcast on every major format. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter. Speaking of social media, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. I'm going to try to get a Snap and maybe a TikTok going pretty soon. But hope you enjoyed the episode. Have a great day.